You need a kind of image of a sound.
Jump into unexpected areas and do daring things with music. I wanted to be more dramatic. I wanted to investigate things that were not the kind of things I was hearing in Greenwich Village or the singer-songwriter group.
Beyond what you learn, you are changed by the music you make. You become, you know, it's not a simple thing that you do the music. In a certain way, the music is doing you, too.
People changing music and people being changed by music. What changes in music have changed you? For some, it's a thundering electric guitar. For others, it can be something gentle and quiet, something that helps them open the door to a new kind of sensibility. I'm David Garland. This is Spinning on Air. And this time we're talking about one particular creative key that helped gently unlock a door for a generation. We're talking about Wildflowers. Wildflowers was a 1967 album by Judy Collins, and it was arranged by Joshua Rifkin. And I'm going to speak with both Judy and Joshua about their experiences making that album, what went into it, what they got out of it, and what that project means to them decades after it was made. Judy Collins started her life of music as a student of classical piano, but she was still a teenager when she started performing folk songs, and her first album of quite traditional folk songs was released in 1961. On her first few albums, Judy Collins was a singer, not a songwriter. She sang traditional material and every once in a while chose wisely from some of the folk songwriters like Pete Seeger for her repertoire. But she, like lots of other people back in the 1960s, were kind of itching to go beyond the boundaries that had been set before and find some new territory, some newly meaningful territory. So Judy Collins developed pretty quickly, and by the time she got to 1967 and the album Wildflowers, a really beautiful album was produced that was entirely accompanied by orchestral arrangements. Arrangements which grew out of their time, but are not held to that time by cliché. Wildflowers is a really beautiful album, of its time, but timeless. You'll only hear very brief, sort of illustrative excerpts from the album in the context of this podcast, but you're very welcome to listen to the full album through a playlist that I've set up at spinningonair.org. It's a Spotify playlist that contains the full album Wildflowers and some of the other collaborations of my two guests on the program, Judy Collins and Joshua Rifkin. So use that playlist to hear the full album at some point. And at the end of this podcast, you can hear Judy Collins perform two of the songs she wrote for that album, accompanying herself at the piano. Beautiful performance recently recorded. Right now, here's a first-person portrait of Wildflowers. Well, Judy Collins, it's a great honor to have you here on Spinning on Air.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
When my sister-in-law, Teresa, heard that you would be my guest, she said, "Oh, I've spent many a pensive moment with Judy Collins." She doesn't know you personally. She met as a listener.
Absolutely.
And I think all of us have that experience with your music. It's music we turn to when we want to feel and when we want to think and reflect and fantasize about the future. Mm-hmm. And so I think Teresa and I and all listeners feel sort of a special bond with you because you bring us to those places when we listen to your music.
I'm glad of that, and of course, it does explain why I'm not on a total demand list for Las Vegas. I've always wondered about that. Once in a while, I'll sneak in. But I do think, of course, that is the quality that I most value, I think, in what I listen to what I choose to record, what I fall in love with, the things that I write. They always do have a pensive quality, even when they're a little more spirited. They still do have something. It's another reason that I don't like to listen, for instance, to background music. I think that's also, it always disturbs my inner tranquility. If I'm not listening for a purpose, or if I don't know that somehow I'll be helped in some way by listening, it's hard for me to hear optional music.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people do feel that they've been helped after they listen to your recordings.
Good, good. And I've been helped, which is good.
In the process of making
them? That's
right. Yeah. Mm. Your first album came out in 1961. Your most recent was just released, so you've been recording for over 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to focus on this one album from 1967. In your most recent memoir, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, you refer to the album Wildflowers as being romantic and daring. Is that how it felt at the time?
Yes, very much so. I didn't understand just how daring it was, but I had worked with Josh Rifkin on the preceding album, and he and I were friends, and we'd gotten to talk and know each other. One of the things that I had wanted to do with In My Life, which is where the first Leonard Cohen songs were, was to jump into unexpected areas and do daring things with music. I wanted to be more dramatic. I wanted to investigate things that were not the kind of things I was hearing in Greenwich Village or the singer-songwriter group. So I was recording Kurt Vile and, of course, the Beatles and Richard Peasley and Peter Brook's production of Marat Saad. But I thought, now here's my first songwriting on this album, Wildflowers, and I write everything on the piano anyway. And so there were a lot of reasons for me to want to orchestrate things. And he was there, and we talked about it with my producer, and we decided let's do the whole thing. Both sides now worked well. I had just found it. The other material on the album we can talk about, but basically the philosophy was, let's do this completely, beginning to end, as an orchestrate. Well, you know, the folk music police were already at my door.
Right. Dylan goes electric and you go orchestral.
Yes, exactly.
Well, let's listen to some of the music from the Joni Mitchell song, Michael from Mountains, sung by my guest, Judy Collins. The music is arranged and conducted by Joshua Rifkin.
Michael wakes you up with sweets. He takes you up streets and the rain comes down. Sidewalk markets locked up tight and umbrellas bright on a gray background.
Judy Collins, a 1967 recording from her album Wildflowers. Judy Collins is here with me. When did you first encounter the music of Joni Mitchell?
It was 1967 in the wee hours of the morning. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I think it must have been in the spring. It was April, May, maybe. And I got a phone call that woke me up out of a deep sleep. And it was my friend Al Cooper, who was the man who started Blood, Sweat, and Tears and also the Blues Project. And he and I were great buddies. And he had called me. He knew my phone number. I can't think of how he would have been able to dig it out otherwise. He knew my phone number by heart, and he'd often call me at different times, but never at 3 a.m. And he said, I've got this girl here that I followed home, and she's just sung me this song, and I thought, I've got to call Judy and have her sing it, because I think it's perfect for you, he said
wow.
to me.
At 3 a.m. on the phone.
On 3 a.m., and I heard it, and I said, I'll be right over.
Did you go over there?
Well, I was over there the next morning, bringing Jack Holzman, the president of Elektra, so that I could have him hear it and agree with me that it was going to be sort of the piece de la resistance of this album, finally kind of the whipped cream on the top of the sundae.
So you first heard Both Sides Now just sung in the disembodied voice of someone you'd never met over the phone.
Yes. I'd never met her. I knew something about her because Tom Rush was a great fan, but she had not recorded anything yet, and she was still kind of wandering through the village with her guitar, singing at the basket clubs. And Tom had recorded a song of hers called
Urge for Gone, I believe.
Let's see. Yesterday a child came out to wander.
The Circle Game.
The Circle Game. And so
wait, what am I doing? I'm cutting you short. Keep singing, please.
caught a butterfly inside a jar. And we knew it because of Tom's recording it. I think most of us knew it because of that. We didn't know Joni very well yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great surprise.
Mm. And did you feel when you heard Both Sides Now, this is a hit, or
did it
hit you in some deeper way?
Well, we didn't make hits in those days. I had certainly had a lot of success. They told me that that Leonard's first couple of songs, Suzanne and Dress Rehearsal Rag, when I recorded them, they were on the Billboard charts for 35 weeks from the previous album, from In My Life. So there was a lot going on with my records, but I'd never had major hits yet. But I think we both, all of us understood that it had that potential. But it took a long time, you know, it didn't happen overnight. Radio loved it, but they had some problem with the mix, of all things. People used to always talk about the mix, how the mix wasn't favorable for radio, which never... I could never quite understand that. But my then producer went back in the studio and remixed Both Sides Now so that it was radio friendly, whatever that means.
Hmm. What is the difference, do you know, between the album
probably
and the single
mix? Probably a little more edgy in terms of more bass, perhaps a little more drums. I mean, mm-hmm. It might have been mixed at a higher level of onslaught than I would have given.
More compression, that
maybe,
kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, a number of people with whom I've spoken of Wildflowers, your album, say, you know, I can't imagine listening to it in anything other than the order in which it's laid out in the original album, because it's like reading a book from start to finish. It's a journey you want to go on in the form it's been presented. But let's listen to Both Sides Now, since we've been talking about it.
Good.
So here's my guest, Judy Collins, performing Both Sides Now by Joni Mitchell.
And ice cream castles in the air, and feathered canyons everywhere.
Both Sides Now, a hit in the day, 1967, for my guest Judy Collins, and a new exposure for the songwriter Joni Mitchell.
Tremendously so, yes,
yeah.
Tremendously so. And I think also that wonderfully unusual refrain played on the harpsichord, which, of course, was Josh Rifkin's wonderful idea. I had no idea he was going to do that. And it just makes it kind of jump right out at you, I think.
It's a beautiful arrangement. All of these arrangements on Wildflowers by Joshua Rifkin are really extraordinary. I mean, they're beautiful. And perhaps at the time, they were just sort of part of the experimenting that was going on in orchestrating pop music. But somehow they, to my ear, they stay fresh and adventurous even now. They didn't take on some of the cloying style of the time.
And that, of course, is the result of a lot of things. It's a result of my hovering over him, bringing him cups of tea and watching the progress of the orchestrations. But, of course, he's grounded in classical music and certainly was making albums for Nonesuch then, doing Telemann and doing Haydn and then also doing Scott Joplin. So he had this very, very solid classical grounding, which I had too. I mean, that's where I came from. And my producer, Mark Abramson, same thing, very involved in medieval music, as was Josh. And in being precise, I mean, the idea was that our backgrounds in classical music all converged in a number of ways and have continued to do throughout my career. And I hope that we can say the same thing for other orchestrations of songs that I've done through the years, because I've been very particular, very specific, very settled into the idea that it must sound fresh. It must not sound like certain things that I've heard, let's put it that way.
You don't want to resort to cliches.
That's right.
And you certainly didn't in this album. Joshua Rifkin, thanks for being here.
Thanks very much for having me here.
Do you remember the circumstances under which this album, Wildflowers, began?
As if it were yesterday, I'll have to say.
Yeah.
It was a special moment, a special project, I think, for all of us, certainly for me. Judy and I, just to back up one thing, Judy and I had already done one album together. This was an album called In My Life.
Which has only some arrangements in the songs.
Right,
others
right.
are just guitar and voice
that's
and that
right.
sort of thing.
But this was the first time we worked together. And that was also already a wonderful collaboration. Judy, the producer, Mark Abramson, who's unfortunately no longer with us, just seemed to click as a team in doing this. And so it seemed automatic that there would be another one.
Do you know how they found you for In My Life?
Oh, yes. They didn't find me. I was there. I had entered the recording world when I was 19 with an outfit called the Even Dozen Jug Band. Which was actually a sort of great seminal force in American pop music, in the sense that the membership, all kids at the time, included John Sebastian, who went on to be part of the Lovin' Spoonful, Steve Katz went to Blood, Sweat, and Tears, David Grisman of Dog Music, and so forth. I mean, an extraordinary bunch of teenage misfits all hanging out together. And we got a recording contract with Elektra. So I was there at Elektra when then Elektra founded Nonesuch. That got me into Nonesuch doing various odd jobs for them, and then...
Including the Baroque Beatles.
Well, that was actually done for Elektra, but that was because I was on the scene, I got tapped to do that. The idea was Jack Holzman's, the head of the firm, but I wound up doing the album, and it was through that album that Mark Abramson, who was co-producer on Baroque Beatles book, and I think Jack, who was keeping an eye over all of this, and Judy would sometimes stop around at sessions, said, let's have him do some arranging. And I can still remember when they first asked me about arranging for Judy, you know, I said, you know, I've never arranged before, so of course
really?
I'll do it. we did that. And then, as I say, Wildflowers was next on the cards, as it were. I had spent the intervening year in Germany. In fact, they first contacted me there, which was, of course, not as easy in those days as it is nowadays. But we spoke. I think we might have met in London occasionally and started thinking about this project. And then I came back to the States in the late summer of 67, barely got a new apartment in Princeton, New Jersey, where I was going to be in graduate school, and then dashed out to the coast where we made the record. We did it in L.A.,
Did you make the arrangements only after you had gotten there? Or?
Yes, actually I did.
Wow.
I mean, we discussed the choice of songs, and we had some of the songs set up. And I had ideas, but there was no time really to do anything before that. And then I got out to L.A., in fact, we had maybe 7 or 8 days before the first session, I had to be coming up with some arrangements, and I got stuck. I really got stuck. And here, you know, they're all going off to the beach at Malibu having wonderful times. And I'm sitting in my room in the Hollywood Hawaiian Motel. And I do have a piano there and I'm struggling. I'm not having an easy time of it. And I'm still stuck. And at one point they say, well, you know, we're going out to lunch at the home of the man who ran the West Coast office of Elektra, a gentleman named David Anderle. They said, we're going out to David's for lunch. Come to lunch with us. I thought, you know, hey, I'm desperate. What does it hurt? I'll go and have lunch. And we have an excellent lunch. Judy cooked a splendid beef stroganoff. We drank good wine. And in the middle of lunch, I said, hey, get me some manuscript paper. And I sat there eating and I started to write the first arrangement on the album, Michael from Mountains, as we were sitting there.
Michael from Mountains, go where you will go to. Know that I will know you. Someday I may know you very well.
What had happened?
I don't know. It might have been the wine, the beef, the desperate. Who knows? I also remember that we were talking about Jorge Luis Borges, who had just been translated and was just becoming popular. That was, you know, this was typical sort of, you know, conversation in such circles. And I guess it kind of unblocked me or something. So I just sat there, and frankly, I didn't know what I was writing. You know, I mean, I knew. I was just trusting the technique, as it were, to do the right things. And I knew the notes that I was putting down. I knew that they would fit. And then I quickly did the second tune on the album as well, since you asked. I think I started it indeed at that same lunch.
Really?
And then we came into the session. I remember the first session to record Michael from Mountains. And I still didn't know what it would sound like, really. And I gave the downbeat, you know, for this. And you can rarely say this about something you've done, but I didn't think that I had done it, and I thought it was gorgeous. I thought this was beautiful, you know. And I thought, my God, did I do this? And people came up to me, and I said, you know, that's really gorgeous, etc. I said, yeah, isn't it? You know, which is not exactly the thing you're supposed to say, but I felt disconnected enough from it to feel that way about it.
Do you remember what was going through your head and not through your hands or whatever when you were not making any progress in that hotel room? What was holding you back? What was in the way?
I don't know. I just couldn't find the answer for the songs. You know, you need a kind of image of a sound, and you need a texture maybe, or some thematic bits or something like this. And once you have that, you can run with it and elaborate it and shape it and so forth, work with it. But if you don't have that, you're kind of really struggling or sort of reaching out. And I just wasn't getting there. There was a novel at the time that's been long since forgotten, that had a wonderful first line. It was about a novelist, and I forget the novelist's name, but it's whatever his name, he says, is sitting at his desk hearing the wrong voices. And that's how I was. I was hearing the wrong voices. And then at lunch, I suddenly heard the right voices, and from then on, the writing went very fast.
Wow.
Take the lilies and the lace from the days of childhood, all the willow.
Judy Collins, tell me a little bit about Mark Abramson. He was the producer, as you've mentioned, and he produced all of your prior albums.
Yes.
Wildflowers was your seventh album.
Yes, it was. And Mark and I produced together up until about 1972. And then he decided to leave New York and go to the country and sort of sold his tools and shut up the workroom and moved up to Vermont. I think that was the right thing for him to do. He had a different path, but he and I were very close and very connected.
He helped guide your musical selections, or how did he function as producer?
Well, we talked all the time about where we were going, what we were going to do, what we should listen for, and then when we'd looked at things together, deciding. Now, for instance, he and Josh suggested the Ecco la Primavera, Ecco la Primavera, which is a 13th century piece of music by Landini.
Piace.
And I was perfectly happy and willing. And then I would suggest, oh, well, let's do the music from the Mara Sad. And that seemed to meet you. We always seemed to meet in the middle about things. We didn't really argue or fight about things. I don't think there was anything that I ever wanted to do that I wasn't allowed to do. That was very important. Nobody ever pushed me in a direction that I didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
It was always directed by me, but I had a partner, both in Mark and also in Jack, because Jack was very hands-on.
Jack Holtzman,
mm-hmm. Yes, president of Electra. When you said that about the programming of Wildflowers, Jack is the primo sequencer.
Uh-huh.
And every album that I've done, he's at least had a look at. And all the ones on Elektra, he really did himself.
Hmm.
The sequencing. You know, we would, maybe I'd have a quibble here and there, but he was always so close to the mark.
Mm-hmm. He seems also an interesting man who shaped Elektra into a very interesting and effective and influential record company.
Absolutely. And we don't always think about this, but the people who were in this profession, like Jack, like Maynard Solomon, like Dunhill, the people at Dunhill, people at, who were the entrepreneurs who started certain labels and rode with them and developed them and stayed with their artists and nurtured their artists, a lot of it had to do with the reason that we look at the 60s the way we do, musically, artistically. They had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Jack Holtzman, it's certainly true for him. This is Spinning on Air. I'm David Garland with a special guest this week, Judy Collins, and we're focusing on her 1967 album, Wildflowers, an album that was beautifully orchestrated by Joshua Rifkin, and an album which contains the work of only four songwriters. I was interested to see when I looked closely and tallied it all up. There is the 14th century piece that you mentioned, but otherwise all the songs are by either Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, Jacques Brel, or Judy Collins. And I think your songs on this album are really remarkable, but I want to talk first about Leonard Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
When did you first hear his songs?
He came to see me through the introduction of a mutual friend who always talked about him. She was a social friend, really, and she would talk about Leonard with the kind of this dazed look on her face and talk about how wonderful, what a great poet he was and how he'd written a couple of books by that time. And then she started saying to me, you know, he's written some songs and he wants to bring them to you to see whether you think they're songs. And so we arranged a time when he would come to the house, and he came to my apartment, and he did not sing that night, which was amazing to me because mostly these songwriters will just throw you down on the floor and sing the songs and then leave, you know. he didn't sing. We had, my boyfriend was there and a couple of other people, and we talked, and then we went to dinner. And then I said, well, why don't you come back tomorrow and sing me those songs that we talked about? And so he did, and quickly thereafter, I recorded both Suzanne and Dress Rehearsal Rag. And then I put him on a fundraising concert for WBAI at the site that had been the Fillmore East. And it was a great big concert. There were a lot of interesting people on it. So he said, I can't perform live. I want to be a writer. I don't want to be a singer.
This is Leonard Cohen.
Leonard, yes. And he made his debut on stage. And of course,
because
the
you
rest
shoved
is
him
history.
Out there.
Yes, I pushed him, pushed him out, insisting that he would sing. He froze during the second verse.
What was he singing? Do you remember?
He was singing Suzanne. Uh-huh. I told him, you have to sing it. People knew it because I had it had been now a very well-received album by that time. And he got stage fright or something and turned back and came off stage. And I always say an audience really loves to see you fall on your face. They're very excited by that. Who knows why? And they encouraged him to come back. And then he said, well, you have to go back out on the stage with me. I'm not going back out there alone. So we came out on the stage and finished the song. But it had broken his I'll never perform in public barrier.
Uh-huh.
Fortunately for all of us.
Yes.
I had been aware of Leonard Cohen. I knew who Leonard Cohen was as a poet and as a novelist. The name circulated in certain circles in those days. And actually, when we were doing the album before Wildflowers in my life, Judy said, I have a couple of songs by Leonard Cohen. And I said, you know, does he write songs? Basically, I was surprised.
All right, she recorded Suzanne on that album.
Suzanne, although that was not my arrangement.
Right.
I had done an arrangement, but it didn't really work out. But we also did Dress Rehearsal Rag of Leonard Cohen on that. And that's an arrangement I like, and it's a song I like very much. So Leonard Cohen had already sort of moved into consciousness here, and then we had a fair share more of him on Wildflowers.
Over the course of a number of years, I recorded mostly on every album. I'd have one or two of his songs, and I think on this album I have, let's see.
You have three,
Priests.
I believe.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yeah.
Sisters of Mercy,
Sisters of
Priests,
Mercy, Priests,
and Hey, That's No Way
and
to Say
Hey,
Goodbye.
That's No... Three of his very best songs, I think.
Yeah. Which one of those would you like to hear right now?
I'd like to hear Priests.
Okay. Nice one. Not the best known of those
Not
three.
Not the best known.
But it sounds beautiful on your album, Wildflowers. Here's that recording by my guest, Judy Collins.
And who will show
That's Judy Collins from her 1967 album Wildflowers. We've celebrated the album on Spinning on Air with Judy Collins herself, and now we're listening to some of it with the man who did the arrangements for that album, Joshua Rifkin. And I hope my listeners are aware that while this is, something that anyone can be proud of, Joshua Rifkin has many other things to be proud of. He's studied the work of Bach. He's led the Bach Ensemble since the late 1970s. He helped spearhead the revival of interest in Scott Joplin's music back with the albums that he recorded for Nonesuch in the early 1970s. Did you ever feel a conflict between your work in, say, the music of Johann Sebastian Bach and writing music for Judy Collins' arrangements?
None whatever. Mm. Maybe I have a profoundly schizoid personality, but whatever I find interesting and I choose to do, or I'm I have the occasion to do and it seems worth doing, I put myself into that, really, and for a time I just know nothing else. Mm. And obviously it's the same person in all of these different things. Maybe it's different facets of the person. And I know that the relationships might not be obvious in the products themselves, but certainly to me it all feels of a piece. In fact, sometimes I know that I have a certain reputation for doing a number of different things, and I often think, no, it's all so boring. It's only me who's doing all of this. You know, it's only the same person does this stuff, and that's not so interesting.
Well, do you find that one sort of feeds the other in perhaps an indirect way?
I think so. I think, everything in music relates somehow. And everything in music gives you some new way of thinking, some new insights. And these can, many of them are transferable. Mm-hmm. Every one of them is transferable to some other kind of music. Not all of them are transferable to all other kinds mm-hmm. of music. But I think, yes, you learn a lot from these things. And also beyond what you learn, you are changed by the music you make. You become, It's not a simple thing that you do the music. In a certain way, the music is doing you, too. And you're not the same after certain musical experiences or after any musical experience. So each time there's a shift, there's subtle, almost unnoticeable changes, evolutions. But the next time you come back to another music, some of that is going to be there.
Mm. So do you feel that maybe there's some remnant of the old jug band when you're directing the music of Bach?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I actually conducted the jug band some of the time. If you imagine, uh-huh. I mean, this was a large bunch of players for a sort of folk ensemble, and we had worked out some very tricky cues and things like that. And so, I was there doing the conductorial bit, and I worked on arrangements and wrote a couple of tunes, etc. So that's one thing. I think the other thing was the experience of community. Being part of a group of musicians like that and making music which was not notated, where we really just had to be listening to each other, reacting to each other, it just kind of tunes up the synapses, and I think that's also something that's always stayed.
Mm. Judy Collins said that when it came time to make the album Wildflowers, she was really very intentionally trying to do something different for her. She had made albums where she just sang and played guitar. As you mentioned, the prior album to Wildflowers involved some arrangements, but she really wanted something new. She wanted new territory. She was introducing new songwriters, Leonard Cohen mm-hmm. and Joni Mitchell.
And Joni Mitchell, sure.
And did she ever tell you that she wanted something new in this project?
I believe so. Certainly Mark, the producer, did. I knew that they were seeking something new. I mean, when we first worked together on In My Life, already said, they were going in a new direction. And that's one of the reasons, obviously, that I was brought on board. And I think they felt this was an even bolder move out. In My Life had something, as you say, of a mixture of the older, the newer. Actually, her previous album, Judy Collins 5, also had a bit of electric stuff in it. But this was, I think, a real watershed moment. And I was aware of that from the start, and we were all, I think, you know, just feeling out a different way to go. And I'll have to say again, I had wonderful freedom on this. You know, I look back, and I mean, here I am, a kid of 23, and they trusted me with this. They just put it in my hands, and if I said, look, I need an 80-piece orchestra next week, which I did for the song Albatross, well, there it was next week. So I, in fact, one of the things I loved about this was being able to write for this big orchestra or write for very unusual combinations, use harp and winds alone in Skyfell, you know, use an odd chamber ensemble in one other thing. And all of this was possible. They just said, you do it. We trust your taste. We trust your chops to do this. And that was wonderful, working with these glorious L.A. studio musicians who are, you know, just fabulous. It's really where I learned how to conduct, you know, doing that kind of thing. And, of course, Judy, who was such a wonderful musician with this impeccable sense of taste, of timing, and beautiful voice. It was a marvelous experience.
I'm speaking with Joshua Rifkin. We're talking about recording the album Wildflowers back in 1967. Let's hear that piece with the large version of the orchestra on it, Albatross.
Another song of Judy's, by the way.
And in the night, the iron wheels rolling through the rain, down the hills, through the long grass, to the sea.
Judy Collins. We've heard you sing songs by Joni Mitchell and by Leonard Cohen. And, you know, these were, as you've described, these were songwriters who were active at that moment, who were just beginning their careers. And they were, in that sense, probably like a lot of other songwriters who approached you with their material. But I think, in retrospect, sort of saying that Joni Mitchell or Leonard Cohen is a good songwriter is a little bit like someone in Beethoven's time saying that Beethoven's guy is pretty good.
Yes, you know? Yes. He had a sponsor. He had somebody who could encourage him and help him. Everybody needs that, I think. Everybody, even Beethoven.
Yes, and so that is a role that you took on.
I did, and mainly I think it comes from being a fan. I'm a fan, you know, I love talented people. I love to hear something new that's from a great talent that's unusual. And I'm still, you know, I'm still doing that. I'm still looking for songs, finding songs that are unusual and fresh and different.
Can you tell us what you listen for and what you've heard that make a difference in a song to you? Or is it just one of those, I know it when I hear it kind of things?
I know it when I hear it. And it's from, my mother always used to say to me, you know, you didn't invent this, she would say. You know, your father always picked the best songs from the shows, always came up with the winners, you know, the ones that were going to become huge hits because they were perfectly wonderful. And I guess, I think that has a lot to do with it. It's hearing the best of the best and then putting together your own aesthetic about what certain chords will drive me away from a song. A certain lyric will drive me away. If the lyric and the music don't settle in a certain way in my own psyche, then they're off the table. A change of chords in the wrong place will send me running from a song. A lyric that sounds too trite or too obvious will send me away. A number of songs have come to me that became huge hits that I couldn't sing because they rubbed me the wrong way or the lyric wasn't quite up to snuff, you know. For me, so I think that these criteria are probably built around the time when you're practicing the Mozart piano concerto and admiring the way it all fits together as you're learning it by analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think probably the analysis was in there almost as a default position that I apply without knowing it to the things that I hear.
Hmm. So you're looking for something substantial enough
Yes.
that your analytical ear will,
Exactly.
will be satisfied.
Substantial enough. And of course, I wanted to be substantial. I never wanted to sing something that was fluff. Although once in a while, of course, it's fun. I mean, I didn't think I'd ever been on the Bobby Darin show, but I looked on YouTube not too long ago and I saw me singing a duet with him on Splish Splash, I Was Having a Bath.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, the exceptions to the rules, of course, prove the rules.
Well, your critical and inviting ear led you to these wonderful songs and these genius songwriters, Leonard Cohen and Joni Mitchell. You decided to sort of construct this album, Wildflowers, around their work and the work of Jacques Brel, and you figured, I'll write a few songs to go with those, right?
Yes, they were my first songs, and that's probably what guided me. The first songs were written in early 1967. That was when Leonard Cohen asked me that key question. He asked me why I hadn't written my own songs after I'd recorded Suzanne and Dress Rehearsal Rag and before I wrote the few songs that are in the Wildflower album. And I guess I just simply had never thought of it because I was trained as an interpretive pianist, singer, also raised in the family of an entertainer who sang mostly Rodgers and Hart and some Irish songs, and once in a while would write a very good song.
Oh, really?
He's written a couple of good songs, my father. But it was never something that was encouraged. My piano teacher said that she knew Sibelius's family very well, and the daughters had chosen to burn all of his unfinished manuscripts when he died, and she thought that was a very good idea. She always thought if you weren't Sibelius or you weren't, you know, the best composer in the world, you might as well give it a pass. It was not encouraged.
And your piano teacher was teaching you to play Mozart and to perform concertos. You were a classical music student.
I was, and she was a great conductor herself and performed and made a big difference. She was the first woman to conduct major symphonies around the world, not just here.
What was her name?
Her name was Antonia Brico. I made a movie about her called Portrait of the Woman, the story of Antonia Brico. She really was quite amazing. She had her own orchestra here in New York during the war, all women at Carnegie Hall. And she was phenomenal. So she was a Dutch-Italian, ferociously determined person. But I did switch horses and begin singing folk songs when I was 15 or so, 14, 15. But the writing, no encouragement there and no desire on my part because I had all these other great songs to sing. There were so many great songwriters that I wanted to interpret and I was meeting them all in New York.
Hmm. And it had really never occurred to you
never
before?
Never occurred to me. I never tried it. I had a notebook that I had kind of scribbled very dark thoughts and dark poems in, but I had no... There was never any intention of writing songs. And when he asked me that question, I then went to the piano because I was then practicing again, had my Steinway piano in my apartment and I was getting my technique back and playing plenty of Hannon and Mozart. And this was 1967. So I'd been recording since 1961 and I just sat down and noodled. You know, that's the way I write. I sit down and I noodle and play things. First of all, I always play my exercises because that's the way I was taught. And next, I got a notebook out and I started writing things. The first song, which was Since You've Asked, took me 40 minutes to write. Further exploration would lead me to take things under consideration that would take me 5 years.
Uh-huh.
I've still got some of those in my notebooks that still aren't finished.
Well, let's listen to this song, Since You Asked. It does not sound like the first song that anyone wrote. Mm-hmm. I guess you had to be Judy Collins, who had been exposed to some of the great songwriting and had been involved in the performance of it, and with the classical piano background. Mm-hmm. A gorgeous song. Let's hear it now in this 1967 recording by my guest, Judy Collins.
As my life spills into yours,
great arrangement. It really is.
Yes.
Super.
Beautiful arrangement by Joshua Rifkin for a song that was being recorded for the very first time soon after it was composed.
Mm-hmm.
Since You Asked by Judy Collins, who sang it from her album Wildflowers. And Judy Collins is with me here on Spinning on Air. I'm David Garland. You have a beautiful voice, of course.
Thank you.
And it was interesting to learn in your memoir, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, that you have been taking voice lessons throughout your career and continue even today?
I don't. My teacher died, but you might say that because Max took my husband under his wing.
Max, your voice teacher.
My vocal coach. And he took Lewis under his wing and explicitly taught him what to listen for.
Hmm.
And so Lewis is able to say to me, this and this and this, and you know, you weren't as clear. You have to watch your clarity in this area.
Hmm.
And watch your phrasing here. And I have another friend who studied with Max, Harris Yulin, and I said, I'm going to try to do a master class about Max's teaching one of these days. And he said, well, you just remember the clarity and phrasing and stay with the phrase till the very end.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell, yes.
Well, just interesting to realize that your voice, which sounds so beautiful and natural, is the product of work and refinement throughout your career.
Throughout. Yeah. I started out with good stuff.
Yeah.
But I had lots of problems throughout and thank God found a teacher that could help me overcome them.
Mm. Well, hey, it's terrible to have to say goodbye.
Yes.
But
yeah.
We're coming to the end of the hour, and we're going to conclude with the final song from Wildflowers, which is Hey, That's No Way to Say Goodbye.
Mm.
I loved you in the morning, our kisses deep and
do you remember hearing this song first?
I remember it very well, but it was sent to me on a little tape of Leonard's. I never really heard the songs in person.
Uh-huh.
He might sing one to me. He would sing me the Stranger song, which is one of the few that I've never recorded. But he would send me the little tapes, and I would learn them and record them. And this just knocked me out when I got this, as they each one of them did. The ones that I chose just put me into a daze for sometimes weeks on end until I'd learned to get them down and, you know, learn to sing them without weeping.
Is that the challenge with some of them?
Very much, uh-huh. Very much.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, your deep feelings and your artistry have enhanced us for many years and are fully evident on this wonderful 1967 album, Wildflowers, which we've been celebrating here on Spinning on Air. The album's easily available on iTunes and
yes,
all the usual
goodness.
Places.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Judy Collins, thank you very much for sharing this music and your thoughts with me here on Spinning on Air.
My pleasure. I'm a great admirer of yours, and I'm so honored to be on your show, David. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wait, don't go. I have a very special bonus for you, podcast listener. Back when I interviewed Judy Collins in about 2012, I asked if she wouldn't come back and perform in the studio, and she did later that year. And by special request, mine, she sang two of her songs from Wildflowers, accompanying herself at the piano. And it was interesting, too, because at that session, when she came in and set up her guitar, she then sat at the piano and started doing these rapid classical piano exercises, showing that really her roots are there, and that's sort of where she starts from, musically, the classical world. But she accompanied herself very elegantly in a performance of a kind of suite of two of her songs from Wildflowers. Of course, there they were orchestrated by Joshua Rifkin, exquisitely. But in the studio, she just accompanied herself on the piano. And in fact, she said,
that's the place that I'm most comfortable, is at the piano playing these songs.
So, as beautiful a collaboration as the album Wildflowers is, let's hear two songs, Since You Asked and Albatross. And this is sort of pure Judy Collins. She wrote the words and music, she sings it, and accompanies herself at the piano. This recorded just a couple years ago, and therefore many years after the Wildflowers album was released. This performance is romantic, rhapsodic, and real. Here are those songs sung by a voice that's not so much the embodiment of innocence as it is now of wisdom.
What I'll give you since you've asked is all my time together. Take the rugged sunny days, the warm and rocky weather. Take the roads that I have walked along, looking for tomorrow's time. Peace of mind. As my life spills into yours, changing with the hours, filling up the world. Turning time to flowers, I can show you all the songs that I never sang to one man before. We have seen a million stones lying by the water. You have climbed the hills with me to the mountain shelter. Take it all. Days one by one, setting them to breathe in the sun. Take the lilies and the lace from the days of childhood, all the willow winding paths leading up.
The sea.
even now by the gate, with your long hair blowing and the colors of the day that lie along your arms. You must barter your life to make sure you are living, and the crowd that is come, you give them the colors and the bells and the wind and the dream. Will there never be a prince who rides along the sea and the mountains, scattering the sand and the foam into amethyst fountains, riding up the hills from the beach in the long summer grass, holding the sun in his hands and shattering the ice in glass? Day and night and day again, and people come and go away forever, while the shining summer sea dances in the glass of your mirror, while you search the waves for love and your visions for a sign. The knot of tears around your throat is crystallizing into your design. And in the night, the iron wheels rolling through the rain, down the hills, through the long grass, to the sea. In the night, the heart bells ringing with pain. Come away.
Judy Collins, performing her songs Since You Asked and Albatross. Many thanks to her publishing company, the Wildflower Company, for permission to include those songs and those performances on this podcast. I'm David Garland. I create the podcast. Spinning on Air is an independent production. Your direct support can help keep it going, so do look into the Patreon page or support through PayPal at spinningonair.org. And please, if you enjoyed this show, recommend it to your friends, rate the program on iTunes, leave a comment if you like, help spread the word that Spinning on Air is here as a podcast, bringing you programs like this one. The name Spinning on Air is a registered trademark of WNYC Radio, used by permission. Thanks to WNYC for the use of the Spinning on Air archive. Thanks, of course, to Judy Collins and Joshua Rifkin, and thank you for listening.